You're listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional engineer, professional futurist, and sometimes occasional sessional instructor of future studies at Simon Fraser University. And this is a weekly show that looks at future trends and issues and important items that affect your daily life and will be affecting your life into the future. Welcome to the show. We're continuing our look at the book Multipliers, How the Best Leaders Make Everyone Smarter by Liz Wiseman, with a foreword by Stephen Covey. We're going to summarize what the book has covered so far. The multiplier formula. Let's compare the empire builder versus the talent magnet. Empire builders bring in great talent, but they underutilize it because they hoard resources and use them only for their own gain, their own profit, their own promotion. On the other hand, talent magnets get access to the best talent because people flock to work for them, knowing that they will be fully utilized and developed to be ready for the next stage. So the four practices of the talent magnet are: 1, look for talent everywhere, appreciate all types of genius, and ignore boundaries. 2, find people's native genius, look for what is native, label it. 3, utilize people to their fullest, connect people with opportunities, shine a spotlight. 4, remove the blockers, get rid of prima donnas, and most importantly, get out of the way and let them do their jobs using their innate talents. Becoming a talent magnet. Become a genius watcher. 2, pull some weeds. Unexpected findings. 1, both talent magnets and empire builders attract A-level talent. What differentiates them is what they do with that talent once it's in the door. 2, talent magnets don't run out of talent by moving their people onto bigger, better opportunities, because there's a steady stream of talent waiting to get into their organization. Chapter 3, The Liberator. The only freedom that is of enduring importance is the freedom of intelligence. That is to say, freedom of observation and freedom of judgment. John Dewey. Michael Chang began his career in a small consulting company. As a young manager, he was forceful with his opinion and erred towards brutal honesty. Over time, he saw its damaging effects and reflected. It certainly doesn't get people to blossom. As Michael gained leadership experience, he began to realize that when you become the leader, the center of gravity is no longer yourself. He had a mentor who taught him that the leader's job is to put other people on the stage. He began to shift his focus to others, and he became less controlling and learned to give people space. Where he used to jump in and do it for them, he learned to hold back. He found that not only do other people step up, but they often surprise you by producing something better than you yourself would have. As he has grown as a leader, he's learned to be direct without being destructive. He's learned how to create an environment where he could tell the truth and have others grow from that truth. Today, This manager is the CEO of a thriving startup company. He has developed several practices that give space for others to do their best work. This makes a conscious effort to create a learning environment by recruiting people with strong learning orientation and then often admitting his own mistakes. This gives others permission to make and recover from their own mistakes. When offering his opinion, he distinguishes hard opinions from soft opinions. Soft opinions signal to his team, here are some ideas for you to consider in your own thinking. Hard opinions are reserved for times when he holds a very strong view. Here's a leader who began his career heading down a path of a management tyrant, but who became a multiplier and a liberator himself. The accomplishment is significant when you consider the path of least resistance for most smart, driven leaders is to become a tyrant. Even Michael said, it's not like it isn't tempting to be a tyrannical when you can. Let's face it. Corporate environments and modern organizations are the perfect setup for diminishing leadership and have a certain built-in tyranny. The organizational charts, the hierarchy, the titles, the approval matrices skew power towards the top and create incentives for people to shut down and comply. In any hierarchical organization, the playing field is rarely level. The senior leaders stand on the high side of the field, and ideas and policies roll easily down to the lower side. Policies, established to create order, often unintentionally keep people from thinking. At best, these policies limit intellectual range of motion as they straitjacket the thinking of the followers. At worst, these symptoms shut down thinking entirely. These hierarchical structures make it easy for tyrants to reign. And in their reign, these managers can easily suppress and constrain the thinking of the people around them. Consider the fate of Kate, a corporate manager who began her career as an intelligent, driven, and creative collaborator. She was promoted into management and moved quickly from frontline manager to vice president, is now running a large organization. She still sees herself as an open-minded, creative thought leader. But in a recent 360-degree feedback report, she was shocked to find that her people don't seem to agree. As she read the report, she could see that her strong ideas were hampering the creativity and capabilities of her people, and her drive for results was making it difficult for people to be truthful and to take risks. One of the comments read, quote, "It is just easier to hold back and let Kate do the thinking." Kate was stunned. Every step she had taken up the corporate ladder made it that much easier for her to unintentionally kill other people's ideas. The nature of the hierarchy had skewed power, making every conversation Kate had with a subordinate inherently unequal. The playing field was tilted in her favor. An off-the-cuff remark could be translated as a strong opinion and turned into policy for her division. If she rolled her eyes or sighed sharply after someone's comment, everyone in the room noticed and avoided saying anything that they thought would produce the same reaction. She had more power than she realized. She had become an accidental diminisher. I suspect I saw too many military movies in college because they all started to look alike. Inevitably, there would be a scene where an army private who was privy to some debacle would stand at attention and nervously appeal to the commanding officer. Permission to speak freely, sir. I could never understand this strange custom and why someone would seek permission to speak freely. After all, I was in college where thinking and speaking freely was the norm. However, after several years in the real-world workplace, I clearly understood. Formal hierarchies suppress the voices and often ideas of those at the bottom. Multipliers liberate people from the oppressive forces within corporate hierarchies. They liberate people to think, to speak, to act with reason. They create an environment where the best ideas surface and where people do their best work. They give people permission to think. The tyrant versus the liberator. Multipliers create an intense environment in which superior thinking and work can flourish and are encouraged. Tyrants create a tense environment that suppresses people's thinking and capabilities. A tense leader. Gina Healy was an SVP of field operations for a large telecommunications company. She was a serious leader who, even at 5 feet, 3 inches, had a way of towering over people who worked for her. Gina was a smart manager with strong experience, but Gina was an absolute tyrant. Her colleagues said she created an environment of hysteria. She created fear all around her, intimidated and bullied people until she got what she wanted. Her primary approach to leadership was, "What more can you do for me?" When one of her managers said, "She's a bit like a ruthless Miranda Priestly in The Devil Wears Prada," I got the picture immediately. Not only was Jenna a bully, but she was stuck at random. It was hard to predict what would set her off and who would be the next victim. One person recalled, "He felt like he could be the next guy. I was stressed, on edge, and at risk around her." Her colleagues joked, "There needs to be a storm warning system for Jenna. People need to know when it's time to duck and cover." Jenna's quarterly management meeting in Denver was one such time. Jenna had gathered a cross-functional team to review the state of business in the U.S. market. It was a typical business review, with each function in turn presenting its state of the business. After several presentations, Daniel, the manager of the information technology team, began his presentation by showing the managers the data for how their field service staff was utilizing the IT tools that his team had built for them. He then inquired, quote, "In light of these numbers, I wonder if the service teams are taking advantage of the tools that already exist," unquote. Based on Jenna's reaction, you would have thought he had just told her that her team was stupid and lazy. She snapped, quote, "You have no idea what you're talking about," unquote, and then berated him in front of the group. The argument got heated and lasted for an uncomfortable 10 minutes. Then someone finally signaled that the group was overdue for a break. There was a rapid dash for the conference door room, but Daniel stayed in an attempt to hold his ground against Jenna. With everyone out of the hall, the argument escalated irrationally and turned to shouting. While things were heated in the conference room, outside in the hall there was a distinct chill in the air. Everyone in the hall was quietly cheering Daniel for standing up to this big bully, but those who were next up to present were frozen with fear. You could feel the tension. The fortunate ones who were already given their presentations wished luck to their ill-fated colleagues. Those remaining presenters began scrambling to adjust their presentations, taking out anything controversial that might incite an already livid leader. The presenters watered down their presentations and they got through the meeting, but nothing much was really said, and nothing of substance was accomplished. Jenna's organization made very modest progress, but continually failed to hit its revenue and service quality targets. Eventually, when she went too far and bullied one of their partners, she was exited instantly from the organization. Jenna went to another company as COO. She lasted 2 weeks before being demoted. Six months later, she was asked to leave. People hold back around leaders like Jenna. Such tyrants shut down the flow of intelligence and rarely access people's best work. Everywhere they go, they find people doing less than they really can. It is no wonder they resort to intimidation, thinking it will get them what they no doubt want: great thinking and great work. But intimidation and fear rarely produce truly great work. Let's look at another senior sales and service leader. An intense leader. Robert Enslin was the president of SAP North America, the global software giant. Originally from South Africa, he speaks with calm confidence. Robert is highly respected with a reputation as a fair, consistent sales leader who grows organizations and delivers solid results. Robert operates as a peer to everyone he works with and is accessible to all. One of his managers said of him, "He is very good at disarming you. He is a commoner, one of us. Even if you work three levels below him, he still wants to know what you think. As a result, people are more transparent around him. They don't feel like they have to tell him what he wants to hear. This approachability creates safety for the people around Robert. And that safety allows him to run a massive sales organization with no surprises." Several years ago, Robert was asked to take over the Japanese subsidiary for SAP to address some very specific sales performance issues. When he met with his new leadership team in Japan for the first forecast meeting, he could see the forecasting process was in complete disarray. However, instead of playing the authoritarian, judging their failure and dictating a solution, Robert restrained himself and started a learning process. He helped them realize the limitations of the current process and the advantages of a new approach. He then drew on their knowledge of the Japanese business and asked them, "How can we take this to the next level?" He created a space for the team to try new approaches and to fix the problem themselves. He stayed with them on the issue for months until they could run a forecast process that delivered solid, predictable results for the business.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby, and you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, Instructor of Future Studies at Simon Fraser University. We're now going to take a short break and listen to a very important public service announcement.
With thousands of homeless animals entering SPCA shelters each year, pet overpopulation is a serious problem in BC, but it's one you can help prevent. Spay or neuter your companion animal today. From our perspective, every homeless animal on our streets or in our shelters is one too many. For more information on spaying and neutering initiatives, visit the BC SPCA website at www.spca.bc.ca.
Welcome back. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional futurist.
Welcome back. We're looking at the book Multipliers, How the Best Leaders Make Everyone Smarter by Liz Wiseman, with a foreword by Stephen Covey. We were looking at the chapter, The Liberator. Robert was known for his collegial approach and his calm consistency. But this was tested when he took over the North American business in 2008, just as the global economy was melting down. As spending was locking up and large capital purchases were being put on hold, executives everywhere were beginning to panic. You could feel the tension as you walked through the halls of SAP's Newtown Square office near Philadelphia. One step past the glass door, you could feel the tension as you entered the executive conference room. Inside another conference room, Robert and his new management team were assembled to plan their sales strategies in this new economic environment. Every person on his team knew that Robert had been meeting with the senior executives under a lot of pressure. They came to the meeting prepared to feel their share of the pain. After all, this was a sales organization. But Robert was calm and constant even amid the chaos. His team began to wonder if he hadn't been reading the news or had skipped the executive meetings. He opened the meeting by acknowledging the severity of the economic issues, but suggested that he put them aside. He kept his team focused on the issues within their control. He then asked, "What can we do to differentiate ourselves right now?" safe within their sphere of experience and control. The group worked to identify the value proposition that would help them position their solutions in the turbulent climate. After the discussion, he then asked, how can we help people consume our products so they get the most economic value? Again, the group could wrestle with the question, put down and together a plan. His team said, we know he must have been getting pressure from the higher-ups, but he didn't create anxiety for us. He remained cool, calm, and collected, and was never wiggled out. He doesn't create whiplash for his people. Robert's calmness is not synonymous with softness. He is as intense and focused as any other successful sales executive. The difference is where his focus lies. A member of his leadership team said, with Robert, it isn't about him. It makes it about you and getting the best work from you. Robert's steady hand and open environment provides sanity and stability to an organization that could have easily have spun into a crisis. Tense versus intense. Tyrants create a tense environment, one that is full of stress and anxiety. Liberators like Robert create an intense environment that requires concentration, diligence, and energy. It is an environment where people are encouraged to think for themselves, but also where people experience a deep obligation to do their best work. Diminishers create a stress-filled environment because they don't give people control over their own performances. They operate as tyrants, overexerting their will on the organization. They cause others to shrink, retreat, and hold back. In the presence of a tyrant, people try not to stand out. Just consider how people operate under this rule of the political dictator. Tyrants get diminished thinking from others because people only offer the safest ideas, the most mediocre work, because everything is delivered in fear of retaliation. While a tyrant creates stress that causes people to hold back, a liberator creates space for people to step up. While a tyrant swings between positions that create whiplash in an organization, a liberator builds stability that generates huge forward momentum. The liberator. The liberator creates an environment where good things happen. They create the conditions where intelligence is engaged, grown, and transformed into concrete success. What are the conditions for this cycle of learning and success? They might include ideas are generated with ease. People learn rapidly and adapt rapidly to new evolving environments. People work collaboratively and collectively. Complex problems get solved quickly and efficiently. Difficult tasks get accomplished quickly and efficiently. Let's examine three liberators from three very different industries to create these conditions and free their organizations to think and be free to perform to their highest level. Liberator one, equity in the firm. Ernest Bachrach from Argentina is the managing partner and co-head of Latin America for Advent International, a global private equity firm. With 27 years of experience in international private equity and an MBA from Harvard University, Ernest is clearly an expert, at least on paper. But the source of his genius is the environment he creates to unleash the genius of his organization. One of his analysts described his approach. Ernest makes a conscious effort to create an environment. He creates forums for people to voice their ideas. But he holds a very high bar for what must do before you voice an opinion. You need to have data. He has a problem with opinions that are given without solid data. Ernest builds a learning machine in his organization. When he discovers performance problems, he is quick to give accurate feedback. The feedback is direct and sometimes harsh, but he dispenses the feedback in small enough doses that someone can absorb it then and there, learn from it, and adjust instantly. He teaches his organization that mistakes are a way of life in the investment business. And how does he respond to mistakes? First, he doesn't panic or assign arbitrary blame. One team member said, he lets us know that when decisions are collective, the mistakes are collective too. No one person takes the blame. The team then does a postmortem and learns how to avoid the error a second time. It appears that Ernest understands how to create an environment that best leverages the investments he has made for his people. This might be one factor in his recent promotion to chief executive of Advent in Latin America. Liberator 2, Close Encounters. Everyone knows Steven Spielberg is an award-winning film director. It is likely that your top 10 movie list includes one of his films. But why are his movies so successful, grossing an average of $156 million per film? Some would think that it was his creative genius and his ability to tell a story. Others perhaps would point to his work ethic, but the active agent may actually be his ability to elicit more from his crew than other directors do. People who have worked on Spielberg's firms say, quote, "You do your best work around him," unquote. One way he elicits the best thinking from people is that he knows what people are actually capable of producing. He knows everyone's job intimately, but he doesn't do it for them. He tells them that he has hired them because he admires their work. He uses his knowledge of the job and their personal capabilities to set a standard for demanding their best work. He comes with strong ideas of his own, but he makes it clear that bad ideas are an okay starting point. He says, "All good ideas start as bad ideas. That's why it takes so long." He established an open, creative environment, but he still demands extraordinary work from his team. One of his crew members said he expects people to be doing their best, and you know it when you aren't giving your best. And why does Spielberg produce so many successful movies? Because his crew is twice as productive as some of the tyrant directors we studied. Because Spielberg creates an environment where people can do their best work and want to do their best work. These artists and staff sign up to work with him again and again and again. In fact, Spielberg typically manages two projects simultaneously, each in different production stages, because his crew stays with him and rolls directly onto the next project. He gets their best work and two times the productivity of other directors. And they get to create award-winning films along with him, not under him. So we're going to continue our look at the case studies of liberators. And we're going to be looking at the practices that liberators carry out to make them so good as leaders. And so please stay tuned for future shows. There's lots of very interesting material to come.
You have been listening to Future Talk on CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And Future Talk is a weekly show on important issues that affect you and your future. And this is Dr. Teneri, professional futurist, reminding you that if you're not willing to make the effort to invent your own future, then others will be only too happy to invent it for you. See you next week.
CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1.